He's got this dream about buying some land. He's gonna give up the booze and the one night stands, and then he'll settle down in some quiet little town and forget about everything. But you know he'll always keep moving. You know he's never gonna stop moving, 'cause he's rolling, he's the rolling stone. When you wake up, it's a new morning. The sun is shining, it's a new morning.
To talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
While you're contemplating what would happen if Yellowstone let go and lava was blown 150,000 feet or better into the air, and mostly out of the air, frankly, to the edge of space, and then came raining back down as rocks and virtually incinerated everybody in a 600-mile radius of Yellowstone. While you're contemplating that, and then, of course, the pain would begin from that point out. It's unimaginable, anything that big. While you're contemplating that, I have contemplated a question for Robert Felix, my guest on this matter and others, in a moment. Once again, Robert Felix, and ladies and gentlemen, his book is Not by Fire, but by Ice. And that book has been out how long now?
It's been out since 1997. I did upgrade it last year, and it's on its, I think it's fourth printing, something like that.
That's a good one, then.
Yes.
All right. I'm going to make you the President of the United States. How about that?
Okay.
President Felix has a kind of a ring to it. President Felix. All right, President Felix, if a group of scientists, from renowned institutions and universities came to you in a sort of a panic and they said, President Felix, here's the evidence. Yellowstone is going to let go in an apocalyptic manner, and they describe to you the miles of lava being thrown into the atmosphere and beyond, and they say, Mr. President, this is going to happen, and we feel very soon now, based on the following very sound scientific data, what would you, President Felix, do?
I'd have to be very hesitant about announcing that to the public for fear of panic. That would be really tough. I would have to be so positive of it if I were, I'm not president, and I'm one lone voice.
I have made you president.
But
you are president.
I don't know, and I don't want to give away your movie.
Don't give away my. Well,
I have seen, but
there are going to be certain elements of it.
I'll just have to say it for myself is that I would probably at first do nothing because I would not want to.
So you'd be like every other president.
Mm-hmm. I would probably do nothing for fear, and if it's wrong, oh my gosh! You have people evacuate, and then you're
so
wrong.
you would doubt the scientists then, even if they laid what appeared to be concrete evidence on your Oval Office desk.
You know, from all of the research that I have done over the years, I have discovered that I can pretty well find the figures to back up whichever position I want to back up.
Yeah,
and so I I would have to really trust those scientists very strongly.
Yeah. Well, so President Felix would sit back and say, well, there's nothing we can do. Or you would do, in the end, nothing. In other words, you would think that the possibility of being wrong and evacuating an area a third of the U.S., let's say.
Once I were positive of it.
By the way, is that what it would amount to? Would you have to be evacuating about a third of the United States or what? If you did act.
Number one, I'd have to be positive. You know, if I
were, okay, you've already said that. But let's say you had to evacuate. How much would you have to evacuate?
Well, you'd evacuate the 600-mile radius, excuse me, 600-mile diameter around Yellowstone. And depending on how it looks like the prevailing winds are, much of the Midwest. Because if that area is going to be covered with 7 feet of volcanic ash, I don't see how people would survive that. That is going to cover every railroad, is going to cover every freeway. There's no planes going to be able to come in and rescue anyone.
All right,
it's going to go into the rivers.
Yes, oh, yes.
Water supplies are gone.
What about the aftermath in other ways? I mean, you talk about a 20-degree temperature drop for the world. Wouldn't that mean that large parts of the world, including where you're standing right now, might well be totally frozen over?
During the eruption of Toba, which was a super volcano like Yellowstone, three-quarters of all plants in the Northern Hemisphere were killed. Three out of four of all plants in the Northern Hemisphere. So one of the first things I would do is start stockpiling food. As a government, I'd be stockpiling food. As an individual, I'd be stockpiling food.
Mm.
That would be very important because there will be no food supply for a while if this happens. So that's just the first phase. And then you start getting all that snow and all of the cold and all of the rain that's coming with it. It would be just so tough to survive it. It would also almost make your movie look preferable.
Yeah, apparently it would be much worse than the scenario of a virtual new ice age starting out as it did in The Day After Tomorrow.
Yes.
But the effects, the end effects, I don't know. They'd be perhaps more severe, but the same sort of thing would happen, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would. And I really I don't know the timing exactly, but I do believe that we are on the verge, with all of the things that have been going on with Yellowstone, with all of that activity, and volcanic activity around the world is now the greatest that it's been in more than 500 years.
Well, how much, in the real world, how much more concerned should we be about what you've just told me about Yellowstone? You know, the people burning their feet, the cordoned off areas, the government not much talking about it. I mean, what level of concern should we have on a scale of 1 to 10?
I would be concerned right now on, let's say, a number 5, because it's because the earthquake activity has picked up, because it is acting in ways that it hasn't acted in recorded history. But, you know, it's too bad that we don't have more information to go on. The last time it actually exploded, and this could be a small one, too. About 13,800 years ago, there was an explosion in one of the lakes where one of those lava domes built up, like is building up now.
Yes.
And that only affected areas for about 5 miles around. So, you know, we have to wait and see what else is coming. Because if it's just something that's going to affect things that are 5 miles around, that's no worse than Mount St. Helens. And that certainly wasn't a disaster to the entire country.
But Yellowstone, in the manner you described...
If it does that, because Yellowstone is such a large caldera, I don't think anyone recognizes how large it is. It's It's 52 miles wide and 28 miles long. That's the caldera.
People just don't understand that volcanic activity can come from other than the top of an apparent volcano, right?
Right. Yeah, there's that kind of volcanic activity. And then in the oceans, of course, there's rift volcanoes. And I talk about those in the book, too. But rift volcanoes are where all that happens is that a crack opens up in the ground.
Yes.
And lava starts pouring out. They have rift volcanoes in Iceland where you can actually see it happening. But back in the 1990s, there was a rift volcano discovered off the coast of Oregon, off the coast of Astoria, Oregon.
I remember that.
Yeah, it was a coaxial volcano. It was about 4 miles long. And the thing about these underwater volcanoes is they pump lava into the sea that is 2,100 degrees hot. That's 10 times the boiling point. And the water boils. There's
could you tell me how that then converts in the way it modifies the ocean water it's connected with? In other words, a certain mass of a lava will heat how much water to what degree?
You know, I don't know the answer to that. But I think that underwater volcanoes, for instance, had an awful lot to do with the dinosaur extinction, because there were literally hundreds of cubic miles of lava that poured into the seas.
Mm-hmm. Do you dispute the theory that it was an object from space colliding with Earth, or do you believe that to be accurate?
No, I think it was underwater volcanic activity.
You do? You don't?
I do.
So, oh, really? So,
yeah, there. You know, the Chicxulub crater and I address this in the book too, by the way. But the Chicxulub crater in the Gulf of Mexico, the one that we say was caused by that huge asteroid. There are some scientists, and I know that Charles Officer of Dartmouth College is one who's published a book on it, that some scientists believe that was caused by massive, explosive underwater volcanic activity. And I would agree with them. You know, that caldera, Chicxulub, was first discovered by workers for Pemex, for the Mexican oil company. They were drilling for oil. And they drilled through a layer of andesite, which is volcanic glass. And so when that was first discovered, it was identified as a volcanic crater. Now, part of the problem of identifying it, it's a half a mile below water. So it's not something you can just go take a look at.
Mm-hmm.
But, yes, I do believe that was caused by what I'm talking about right here. That would have been, I believe that was a supervolcano.
Of what magnitude compared to, say, what we just talked about with respect to Yellowstone?
It would be bigger. It would have been because...
Bigger than Yellowstone.
Yes, the crater, scientists believe that crater, well, they don't believe, they've measured it. It's about 110 miles across. So that is... What, that's four times bigger than Yellowstone.
I know that they've measured the debris and coring they've done, I don't know, off the coast of South America up into the Caribbean. They've measured some coring that had the debris that they thought was from an asteroid hit.
Mm-hmm. Well, right?
But you're saying, no, this debris came from the spitting of a volcano thousands of miles away.
I believe it did. You know, one of your listeners emailed me before the program tonight and wanted me to talk about the iridium, because the debris that you're talking about, the iridium,
yes,
there's a layer of clay around the world at that borderline 65 million years ago.
That's correct.
That layer of clay is about a quarter inch thick, in some areas thicker, and it has iridium in it. Now, some people think that entire layer of clay is iridium, but no. What it is 10 parts per billion is iridium. And it turns out that some of today's volcanoes, some on the island of Reunion, some in Hawaii, have 50% of that amount of iridium even in their emissions today. So I believe that iridium came from massive volcanic activity.
I suppose also an asteroid strike could initiate I'm no expert on this, but if you slammed something gigantic into the earth and penetrated the earth to a great degree, couldn't you begin a chain of seismic events and maybe even volcanic activity?
That wouldn't surprise me at all.
So it could be that one set off the other, could it not?
It could be. It could be. There's other occasions where the extinction 248 million years ago, there appears to be craters from that time, the Popogai crater in Siberia, but it also corresponds with the time of massive lava flows in Siberia. So,
but these craters that are made when there's that big hit, you believe these what are volcano artifacts?
I do.
So it's like looking into the top of an extinct volcano.
I do, because of the debris, and some of it is volcanic debris. And the biggest clue that scientists say that it was an asteroid is that iridium, and yet that iridium can be explained as coming from volcanoes. So yeah, I think it's an earthly process.
You say a modern volcano will exhibit 50% the amount of iridium found in the cores?
Yes. Some of them. The island, volcanoes on the island of Reunion.
How do you account for that kind of difference, though, in the amount of iridium?
It apparently depends on how deep in the earth the lava came from. And so I would assume that the bigger the volcano, the
deeper?
Deeper it comes from, yeah.
Huh.
It is still up in the air.
Do you at all speculate on the cause of volcanic activity suddenly becoming, in other words, of the planet suddenly getting a lot of volcanic activity? Why?
I think it has to do with the earthly process called precession of the equinoxes.
Precession, is that just a way to measure time?
No, what it is, you know, the Earth is, let's see if I can draw a picture here for the listeners, but the Earth is tilted on its axis. I mean, our axis of rotation is tilted away from true north.
Yes.
Okay, and if you ever watched a top as it spins, you've noticed that the top never stands perfectly straight up and down. It tilts.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it tilts to the right, sometimes it tilts to the left, but it's constantly on the move, and the Earth does the same thing, but on a much slower scale.
Right.
Now, if you could look at the Earth from space, you'd see that just like a spinning top, the Earth's axis of rotation tilts. And the Earth's axis of rotation constantly moves in a circle just like that top does. And that circular movement, that's what's called precession. And it takes about 23,000 years to make that full circle. So if you could put a long stick through our axis of rotation, long enough to reach into the heavens, you'd see that stick right now would point towards the star Polaris. And that's why it's called a pole star, because the North Pole points toward it. But
right.
12,000 years from now, it'll point toward a different star. It'll point toward Vega. And 23,000 years from now, it'll point toward Polaris again. Well, that's precession. And that ice ages match that cycle. Increases in volcanic activity match that cycle. Increases in flood activity match that cycle. And that precession is what I believe is causing these earthly changes. And that's why we're seeing the increase in volcanic activity.
That's fascinating.
Now,
so the precession in the amount of tilt there is in the Earth. That's what we're saying, right?
No, the tilt. No, this is just that the entire axis of rotation makes a full circle every 23,000 years.
Well, in effect, though, the tilt is changing a little bit.
Okay,
right?
Yes, it also tilts up and down a little bit and changes. But this is the one where it's pointing. Where our North Pole points to in the heavens is constantly moving.
Right.
And for whatever reason, we have these calamitous things happen to our Earth at two sides of that 23,000-year cycle, at every 11,500 years. And, you know, that means that we are pointed a different way from the sun, essentially. And the sun is a magnetic star, and I believe that magnetic activity, that as we are changing, we are going in and out of alignment with the sun's, with the solar system's magnetic field.
You know, so many of my guests, Robert, talk about events of a biblical nature almost that occur on a cycle from 11 to 13,000 years, somewhere in there. It doesn't matter who you talk to, Richard C. Hoagland, gosh, just on and on, people who predict major events, people who talk about planets that come and go. That fits into the same kind of cycle that you're talking about, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Planet X, so-called Planet X.
And I don't know whether there is such a thing.
Even go into Zachariah Sitchin's work. All these cycles is what I'm saying. There's a big similarity there, no matter who you're talking to. Right now we're talking to Robert Felix, but he's talking about the same kind of cycle, the exact same kind of cycle. That alone should give you pause.
Talk with Art Bell. Call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Yeah, how about the Hopi? You could add them to the list, right? Andrea in Portales, New Mexico says, all right, the Hopi Indians agree with your guest. It is indeed the precession of the equinoxes that causes the earth changes. And thus, it is a natural cycle. One volcano eruption pollutes the air more than all 6 billion years of us do in 1 year, or all 6 billion of us do in 1 year. Very, very interesting. We'll be right back. It's funny. Did just occur to me that not just Robert Felix, but all of these people, even including the Hopi. The Hopi you can add to the long list of those who predict something is going to occur and in a certain procession by a certain time. Robert, so how do we know how close to the edge of this moment of repeat we are?
Well, one of the things that I'm looking at is I'm watching the El Niños, because I believe that those El Niños are an indication of what's to come. Now, in 1982, we had the El Niño of the century. I mean, had you ever heard of El Niño before 1982?
No.
Now, most people hadn't. It was no big deal. 1982, we had the El Nino of the century. It caused those huge floods in South America. It did $8 billion worth of damage. We called it the El Nino of the century. Then in 1997, we had another one, did $97 billion worth of damage, and that has been renamed the El Nino of the century. I would say to watch El Ninos. I am, you know, now here I'm guessing, but the next large El Nino should occur somewhere 2008, 2009, and I would say watch that. And if that is even bigger than the previous El Ninos, mm-hmm. I think we're on our way. That's one of the ways that I would say to watch. Another thing that I would watch is what's happening in Europe, because if this Gulf Stream shuts down the way that the Woods Hole scientists think it could, mm-hmm. then Europe will be affected, I would say, first. Europe and the far...
Actually, what scares me about Woods Hole is they say the process is well underway.
Yes.
It's well underway, and they say it could intensify, it could happen very quickly.
Yes, they say it could happen within 3 years.
It's weird that you could come to this point, I guess, where I'm no scientist, but where the salinity had been diluted enough, the temperature had changed enough, that suddenly the current would virtually not just keep slowing at the alarming rate it's slowing now, but would suddenly quit.
Right, not just slow, but actually quit. There are some scientists now who are predicting an ice age in for Great Britain within the next 20 years. And the Pentagon is looking into it. So, you know, you had asked earlier about what would you do as the president. Well, the Pentagon is looking into this.
You clearly said you would do nothing.
That was about Yellowstone.
Oh, that's right.
That was about Yellowstone. I am doing something about this.
Well, you know what? We can make it about this if you want, because really, what can you do about volcanoes?
Not much. That I know of.
Nothing.
No.
Right? Can't do anything about it. So it's not all that different to question, President.
No, but when it comes to ice ages, I am screaming to the heavens as much as I can to look out.
In order to do what?
Well, one of the things during an ice age, if that's what it is an ice age, it's not a worldwide catastrophe. During the last ice age, what happened essentially was that the climate of Chicago moved to Georgia. That's what happened. And temperatures didn't fall that much. Seattle was covered by more than a half of a mile of ice. But the ice.
You see, things like this would be very meaningful. I've got a lot of listeners in Seattle.
Yes. Well,
you know, when they hear covered with a half mile of ice, this has meaning to them.
It was covered by more than a half a mile of ice. The ice extended as far south as Olympia. But 150 miles south of Olympia, and scientists know this from the plants that were growing in the area, mm-hmm. 150 miles south of Olympia, it was only about 7 degrees colder than it is right now.
But this is still cold comfort for those in Seattle and the other areas you mentioned,
large
number of my listeners.
Yes. Yeah. And well, almost all of Canada was covered by 1 to 2 miles of ice.
Now, you see, again, I have many concerned people because we're heard all across Canada. So
that was covered. What I'd say, watch Newfoundland, watch New Brunswick, because as near as I can tell, previous ice ages, it essentially started there by having, not because it was getting colder, but because they were just getting more and more snow, And then it works its way west. Now, last year, and if you have listeners in New Brunswick or Nova Scotia, I'd love to hear from them. Because
you would, huh?
The last couple of years, I believe they've had record snows. And so that's something
yes,
I think...
Yes, we have listeners in that area.
Yes.
I mean, there's strange stuff going on all over the globe. My listeners in Alaska, they could tell you tales about what's going on in Alaska right now.
Different story there. Now, Alaska... And that gave me a problem too, Art, is how do I explain if we're going to an ice age, how come the permafrost in Alaska is melting?
Yeah, I mean, last several years they've had trouble with the races up there, the big dog sled races.
Right, the Iditarod.
They don't have the snow and the ice to have the race.
Well, what I think is happening, I think it has to do with the warming oceans, is any land mass that is close to the warming oceans, where the breezes, the warmer breezes are blowing over them, is going to be melting. But when you go inland, Art, that's where the difference is. When you go inland, the Antarctic ice sheet is growing thicker. The Greenland ice sheet is growing thicker. Now, the Antarctic ice sheet covers something like 5 million square miles. The Greenland ice sheet covers another 700,000 square miles. That is twice as big as the continental United States.
It's big.
That is 100 times bigger than all of the rest of the world's glaciers put together. So what I'm saying here is 99% of the world's glaciers are growing. We are only hearing about the ones on the edges that are melting. I think that it has started.
Well, I guess people are not as inclined to measure one as the other. Would that be true? I mean, I'm trying to... If what you're saying is correct, then why do we not hear about the I actually, you know what? I have heard a little bit. I mean, I've seen a couple of stories about the thickening ice sheets. I have seen a couple of stories. But in general, you're right. People believe that things are melting. Why is that getting all the attention if it's not scientifically the whole story?
I don't know. I've got an article here, August 22, 2002, from the Goddard Space Flight Center, that radar image satellite records are showing that there is an increase in Antarctic sea ice cover. I have another article that shows that glaciers in Antarctica have been moving, and this was March 9, 2003, that glaciers, masses of Antarctic ice, have been moving twice as fast as usual. And there's seven glaciers mentioned here, the Boydell, the Sjogren, the Edgeworth, the Bombardier, the Drygalski. They've actually entered active surging phases toward the sea. So if they're surging, I mean, the reason they're surging is because of the added weight. They're surging towards the sea, so there's more of them to melt. And also in Greenland, I have these published papers that it's growing thicker. But that's from satellite images that not everybody gets to see. But you can take a cruise ship.
Well, I know, but if it's an ultimate truth alongside the other truth about Alaska and the areas that we know are melting, mm-hmm. I mean, I must tell you, Robert, to look at the North Pole 20 years ago and to look at it now is pretty damn frightening. A lot of it, a high percentage of it even, is just flat gone, Robert. And I'm even hearing rumors that they're encouraging people who are flying over the pole, you know, to go to a quick trip to Europe or whatever, to keep their windows shut while they're going over the pole. Now, you know, maybe that doesn't have any meaning. Maybe it does have meaning. I have no idea. But those who have peeked out of their little windows while going over the North Pole have been astounded at the amount of blue water.
Yes. Mm. Well, I think... Again, I think it has to do with the underwater volcanic activity. During the last ice age, the Arctic Ocean had no more ice on it than it has right now, even during the depth of the last ice age. And I believe that has to be... I mean, how do you explain that? How would that have happened during the last ice age when Canada was covered with 2 miles of ice and the Arctic Ocean had no more ice than now? How would you explain that other than... underwater volcanic activity?
I don't know.
And I don't know either.
Certainly willing to consider what you're saying. I don't know myself, but I'm willing to consider it. It seems like you assign an awful lot to volcanic action, including, you know, what killed the dinosaurs and all the rest of it. So you're a very strong believer in this.
And I am, and I'm certainly not in the mainstream here. I'm alone, and yet I have quite a few scientists that do agree.
Hold on. Let's go back to the reason why this is really important. Why, you know, your side of things regarding the building ice and what that means in the larger scheme of things is just virtually ignored compared to the melting that's going on. Why? I mean, that I just don't get that.
The only thing that I can imagine is that I think that during the last 20 years, any scientist who would have pointed this out or really pushed it would have lost their funding.
Why?
Because we believe so strongly in man-made global warming that to me it's almost become a religion.
Well, maybe so.
Yeah.
But listen, it is happening. I mean, global warming, that is.
Ocean warming is definitely happening. I absolutely agree with you.
Well, but as goes the ocean, so goes our fortune, right?
Yes.
Our fortune is with the
But it's not all because temperatures in the atmosphere have been going down for decades. This comes from Alabama meteorologist John Christie. Mm-hmm. He's been studying satellite data since the 1970s, and he has found, and I haven't heard of any scientist who disagrees with this, is that temperatures in the atmosphere are going down. Temperatures on land, I'll give you one to consider, is the United States Department of Agriculture draws a plant hardiness zone maps. Those are the maps you see on the backs of seed packets.
Sure.
That show you where it's safe to plant something.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, in 1960, the USDA drew up a plant hardiness zone map that covered Canada and the United States, and they divided the entire area into 10 zones based on temperature.
Okay.
Okay. In 1990... the USDA drew up a new plant hardiness zone map, and I have both of those maps on my website.
And the difference is?
Temperatures in, for instance, in Tennessee and Alabama, temperatures in many of those areas during that 30 years declined by 10 degrees, average temperatures by 10 degrees. Not, they didn't go up. They went down.
All right.
But we're not hearing about it.
All right. Here's one we did just recently hear about, and maybe you'd like to comment on it, and I'm sorry I don't remember the scientific institution that made the discovery, but the story was basically that the horrid Dust Bowl, that time in the United States where the middle part of the country turned into an unlivable almost surface of Mars, right?
Yes.
The Dust Bowl. That was an artifact of a couple of degrees of ocean temperature change.
I believe that.
There was a recent story about that.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought you'd figure that might fit right in with what you're saying.
Yes, I didn't see that, but I do. You know, there's a scientist in Germany who also is publishing about Little Ice Age. It's a scientist by the name of Dr. Theodor Landscheidt. And he's at the Schroeder Institute for Research in Cycles in Solar. He's studying solar activity.
Yes.
In Germany.
Yes.
And he has published a lot, but I have links to his papers too. But he believes that, and he, as far as I'm concerned, he proves it. But he believes that we'll be into a new ice age by the year 2030, which is, I think, it's going to be even sooner. But here's someone with worldwide credentials, essentially, that's essentially saying the same thing. And I think your movie is going to help so much make people aware that something is coming.
Yes, but there's nothing that really can be done about it. Or is there? I mean, let's say the worst-case scenario happens. I believe recently, with regard to the Pentagon, it was commissioned that somebody write up the worst-case scenario, which was pretty scary. What do you consider to be the worst-case scenario? I mean, you know, mainly we've got listeners here in North America. How will the North Americans be affected? And what should they do? What can any individual do to prepare for what may be soon, you're saying?
Well, one of the things I would say is going back to food, because I think that food will be the big thing, and just the knowledge. You know, if we know the truth, you put me on a plane to Alaska and you tell me in advance where I'm going, and I'll figure out what to do, and I think people will figure out what to do. But if you tell me I'm going to Miami and then you dump me off in Alaska, I'm in trouble. And I think that's what's happening today. We're being told we're going to Miami. We're being told these things. But I think, you know, that we're headed into this ice age. With that said, though, greenhouses. I think greenhouses will be like gold. because then you'll
providing an environment for something to grow.
Yeah, little private greenhouses, I think, will be a great idea for somebody.
Would it be that bad? I mean, would agriculture otherwise in all the good familiar breadbasket kind of areas of the U.S. be any longer possible?
Well, you know, you don't need a full-fledged ice age. You know, if snow should remain on the ground in Canada,
uh-huh.
let's just say 8 inches of snow remains on the ground through one growing season.
That would definitely ruin it.
That's all it takes. It doesn't take a mile of ice. Last year I was doing an interview on a radio station in Kentucky, and a farmer called in. He said that his farm had been in the family for more than 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
And this was he was talking about the previous year, but it had rained so much that spring that he was not able to put his tractors in the field. That farm had put out a corn crop every year dependably for more than 100 years. And just because it was too rainy, he couldn't put his tractor in the field. That's the sort of thing I think it's not going to be. It doesn't have to be this great big drastic happening that the TV coverages are going to be showing, but these farmers aren't going to be able to work, or they're not going to be able to plant.
And is this going to be true across the entire current growing areas of the U.S.?
I don't know whether it will be at the same time. Now, I can tell you where the ice ended during the last ice age.
Well, assuming that we're into an ice age,
yes.
Where would you draw the line with regard to agriculture? Would there'd be a new line to draw, right?
Oh, absolutely. During the last ice age, as I said earlier, the ice went as far south as Seattle, as Olympia, Washington.
Yeah, I understand. I'm asking you for guesses.
Well, then that ice moved back up to the Canadian border in Idaho.
Right.
And then it essentially followed the Missouri River. On the north side of the Missouri River, there was a cliff of ice about 15 stories tall. On the south side of the Missouri River, people were able to live. So I assume farmers would be able to.
Boy, that is a pretty sharp dividing line you're talking about.
It is. 15 stories of ice on one side, not ice on the other.
Holy smokes.
Now, in if you've got listeners in Wisconsin, they can call in and tell us about the eskers.
What are those?
Esker. Those are the moraines that were dropped there by the glaciers.
We're going to have a chance for them to do that and for others to do it too, because we're about to go to open lines with Robert Felix. So if you have a question for Robert, now would be the time to dial.